Are you looking for a good summer read? Might want to think about picking up a Loon Lake mystery. Larry Mueller here, and we have the author of that mystery series with us today, Rhinelander's own Victoria Houston. Her latest book is called Dead Spider. Have you read her books? Any questions about any of the characters or the plots? I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 and send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Or you can also post your questions or comments on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And maybe you're a mystery writer or a wannabe and have some questions about that as well. I know she's always happy to answer those questions too. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Victoria Houston, great to have you back.
Hey, good morning. Great to be here.
I tell you what, I read the book because I had to read the book because I needed it. Read it before I talked to you, but I was thinking, darn it, this would have been a nice one to have taken along on one of my trips up north this summer.
Oh, well, that's a compliment. Thank you.
It was a lot of fun to read. For those who haven't read one of your Loon Lake books, maybe you could give us a little background on the location and the main characters.
Well, the books are set in the North Woods, and I like to say that they're set in a town called Loon Lake, which sort of hovers overhead like Brigadoon. I see Loon Lake north of Wausau, south of Land O'Lakes, and to the east of Park Falls, and to the west of Goodman. And it has characteristics of Rhinelander and Minocqua, Eagle River, Three Lakes, sort of the area up here, which is distinctive because it has so much water and because fishing is so much a part of the culture here. And I have three main characters. The first is Doc Osborne, who's a retired dentist, widowed, and trying to learn how to fly fish. He's been a musky fisherman all his life. Then there's Llewellyn Ferris. She's the chief of police for Loon Lake, and she's probably right around 50. And she's just a very accomplished fly fisherman. And before she was promoted to chief, she used to give fly fishing lessons on the side, which is how she met up with Doc Osborne. And then she discovered that he has some talents in forensic dentistry, in other words, dentistry involving dead bodies. So they've developed a relationship, and periodically she kind of asks him to help out with different investigations, especially if they involve dead bodies. And then there's the third character, Ray Pratt, who's about a 30-year-old fishing guide. Very attractive guy who is a very skilled fisherman, but tells some of the worst jokes you've ever heard.
And that's for sure.
Displays a significant lack of good taste at critical moments. So those are my three characters, but they work well together. They both annoy and love each other.
Yeah, I think you're right. Cynthia on Facebook says, by the way, she's a huge fan of your novel. She likes to read them in the winter because it brings her back to summer in the North Woods. And she wants one of Ray Pratt's hats.
Oh, okay. To tell you the truth, if only I had designed one of those hats, which for listeners who aren't familiar with the books, he wears a hat on his head that actually has a large fish on top with the head and the tail protruding over his ears. And I think if I had designed that, I'd probably sell more of those hats in the books. And to tell you the truth, I have seen a hat like that. And in fact, one of the things I like to say is that my characters are distilled from memories from childhood. And I have a brother who is a fishing guide and had a checkered history early in his life. continues as he matures to still tell really bad jokes. But years ago, he wore a hat like that. And that character is not strictly based on my brother, but I have two cousins from Stevens Point who are also, you know, pretty bad actors in their day. And so, but, yeah, that hat has gotten a lot of attention.
Oh, it has. And Ray, by the way, is also a great photographer, which brings him into a lot of your murders.
Right. And what's helpful, I feel, is setting my stories in this small town, because we know there are limited resources. So it does, it makes sense that you would, Llewellyn Ferris might depend on, you know, sort of an amateur to help out in some cases.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Jan in River Falls has been waiting a bit and has a question. Let's go there. Jan, hi.
Hi. I love mysteries, and I can hardly wait to read your latest book.
Oh, thank you.
I have a question, though.
Sure.
I used to write, long before I was married, had children, went to work, etc., long before life took me away. Anyway, I have some ideas for a couple of mysteries, but I haven't the slightest idea how to go about putting together a short story or a novella, or are there any creative writing short courses?
Well, I'm sure that there are, and I obviously start at the library, but you might also look around your community and see if you've got some writing groups. Usually there are, you know, a couple of groups that get together maybe once a month or so and give each other advice. That's one suggestion. Another suggestion is Stephen King, the famous Stephen King, wrote a very good book called On Writing Well. And I would, you know, suggest taking a look at that. And then there's another one by a writer, Anne Lamott, called Bird by Bird. And it's a wonderful book on getting started and how to stay with it. Yeah. Oh.
I would add to that, and I'm not sure if this is sold out. Jerry Apps teaches a creative writing class in Door County.
That's right.
And you might just go to his website. If you just type in Jerry Apps, you're going to find his website. He's had very good success helping people get going on their writing. And so I would check. I think that's coming up pretty soon, and I don't know. It may be all sold out. But Jerry Apps, APPS.
I'm familiar with him. Yes, I've read his books.
Okay.
Yeah, he may have done a book on writing, too. I'm not sure.
He did.
Yep.
So there's another source for you, Jan.
Well, thank you very much. I'll continue to listen to the show.
Well, good luck. Yes.
Let me know when you get that first mystery written.
You'll be the first to know.
All right. Thanks, Jan. Oh, man. Jerry in Prairie du Chien, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Larry. And good morning, Victoria.
Oh, good morning.
Victoria will probably recognize me as the captain from Prairie du Chien as the captain of the spelling and grammar police.
Well, I was wondering if that wasn't you.
It was. It is. And thank you for, I just opened my email. Thank you for your response on Dead Long Both about my confusion of who lived where.
Certainly. Just to fill Larry in, Jerry emailed me about 2 weeks ago with a list of errors in my book Dead Loudmouth. And so I had to sit down, study my own book, and then get back to him to tell him he's only correct on one count.
Okay.
Oh, but this reminds me, if you don't mind me talking for a minute, Jerry, years ago I got an email from a writer who said that I had located a casino on Highway 45, that there is no casino on Highway 45, and that she would never read another one of my books. And to which I responded, sweetheart, remember the F word, fiction. I get to put casinos wherever I choose. But in Jerry's case, he did. He caught an error in my story that should have been caught by a copy editor.
Ah, all right.
And Victoria, I have a. Was your last book Dead Little Hustler?
No, the most recent book is Dead Loudmouth.
Okay, but the one before that. Anyhow, you have Ray and his and a group of people out ice fishing on a lake, and according to the book, it, you might have been somebody might have pointed this out to you. He's using an 8-ounce jig.
Mm-hmm.
My blackjack weighs 8 ounces.
An 8-ounce, that's a proofing error. Heavens.
Probably an 1/8 ounce would be my guess.
Yeah, that would make more sense. Yeah. I'll tell you the truth is, once you write a book, you are the worst person. And Larry, you would know this just from, you know, radio copy. You are the worst person to proof your own material because your eye goes right over it. And so in the business of book editing, I rely on the proofreaders, but no one, I mean, I would bet every single one of my books has at least 6 errors, proofing errors. It's human nature, you know. So, and then if you want to rely on your computer, it will turn normal words into very strange things such that you could be sued. So you have to be careful.
But I bet that should have been an 1/8 ounce. Probably a proofreader wouldn't have known the difference between an 1/8 ounce and an 8 ounce.
Well, you know, years ago when I was doing the fourth book, my publisher at the time had changed all the titles that I had on the books to read Dead, you know, Angler, Dead Water, Dead Creek. And my concern was these people live in New York City in a high rise. They don't get a lot of fresh air. And if I'm not careful, the next book will be titled Dead Duck. And so starting then, I used fishing lures or trout flies in the titles.
And that's where you came up with Dead Spider.
Yeah, yeah. But Jerry, to your credit, you do have a sharp eye. And I have a couple other people that I've noticed are just really good at, you know, a discernible reading. So thank you.
Yeah.
Victoria, one other comment. As I pick these things up, I'm wondering if you're not putting them there on purpose.
To torture you. Not to torture people like yourself. No, not yet.
Thanks, Jerry. Oh, man, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I get some of that, too, in my just being on the air. Sometimes I'll say which when I should have said that or I when I should have said me.
Yep.
And people are quick to point it out. I usually
they don't become your best friend, but that's
yeah, it's all right. I don't mind it. It's just always a good reminder. And I usually tell people, well, you know, I'm on a live show 90 minutes a day. 250 days a year, so once in a while I'm going to make some mistakes like that.
Cut me a little slack.
I'll tell you what. Our guest today, we're having some fun talking with Victoria Houston. She is the author of the Loon Lake Mystery Series. Her latest is titled Dead Spider. I really enjoyed reading it. I think you would as well. Questions about the characters, about the book? Have you read her books and want to comment on that? I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you've got a question about writing and writing a mystery. Give us a call. Number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or, like Cynthia, go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be talking about sports and entertainment collectibles. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. Right now, visiting with Victoria Houston, author of the Loon Lake Fishing Mystery Series. Her latest book is called Dead Spider. And once more, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Do you get much mail from? I've read every all but one. I couldn't find one of your books.
Wow, that's a lot, Larry. That's 17.
Yeah, I've read every one of them.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Including the latest one. And do you get mail from or comments or emails or whatever from people who have read them all?
I do, which I really appreciate. And more often these days, because of Facebook, I'll have, if I put up a notice that, you know, a new book is ready or whatever, get a lot of responses. I think I have a good 500 or 600 people following me, following my, you know, Victoria Houston's Mysteries on Facebook. So lots of response, which I appreciate.
And I think we've got a link on our Facebook page to your Facebook book. I'm sorry, your Facebook page.
Well, you know, I'd hope also a link would help to my website, which is just victoriahouston.com, only because we put the whole a list of the books in order on the website, and that's helpful for people who, some people really want to read in order. I knock myself out so you don't have to read them in order, and reintroduce my characters in each book in such a way that they can, you know, get a hold of it right away, but at the same time I don't bore the reader who's read the other books. And so that's handy in addition to the Facebook page.
Yeah, I think you're right. You could read any of these books out of order. Although it's kind of fun to read them in order, because relationships develop. You know, like for example, between Doc and Llewellyn.
Right, right. And there's more detail on that in the early books, and then as we move along, I think the stories move faster with a little less detail.
Yeah, Janine in Minocqua up next. Hi, Janine. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I want to say I enjoy your books so much.
Oh, thank you.
They are so much fun. Excuse me, I have a cold. but I love the fact of the police chief.
Yes.
She was your English teacher, was she not?
Well, Llewellyn Ferris is loosely based on on three women. My favorite high school English teacher, you're correct. But then there are two girls that were in the neighborhood about 4 or 5 years older than I was when I was growing up, and they used to beat me up all the time. They were really tough characters. And one went on to become the chancellor of a major Midwestern university, and since she may be listening, I won't mention the university, but in my humble opinion, I think she, until she retired, she was probably still beating people up. So, and I see Llewellyn as a pretty tough character, but very, you know, kind mm-hmm. and resourceful.
Yeah,
well.
You got yeah. that right.
That's the way I knew Lal Titus, and reading your books just brings her back, even though she's not here anymore.
Oh, neat.
So much fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Janine.
Well, thank you.
And she was a fanatic fisherman.
Oh, she was?
Oh, yeah. She was one of the few women I knew growing up who just loved to fish. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a great, well, you've got a great character there in Llewellyn, for sure. And it's nice to have a woman in that kind of lead role. I mean, she's kind of the boss.
Yep. And the other thing that I like about her is she's not beautiful. And she is not, you know, very trim. She is, she's strong. And
yep.
She's fit.
Strong, so. Fit, and tell you what, old Doc Osborne likes that. Let's go to Tammy in Madison next. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I just wanted to mention with the previous caller, writing classes.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
EW extension.
Oh, no. We're losing it. We're losing it, Tammy. Maybe call back and try again, but she was talking about UW extension opportunities for writing. Are you still there? No, we lost her. We'll have her call back and talk again, because I bet anything she's got some help for us there.
Yep, I think that's great.
We have, well, let's without giving away too much, tell us about the new book.
Well, let me tell you two things that inspired it. The first thing was I was at a New Year's Eve dinner 2 years ago with close friends, and one of the men at the table, the guys were talking business, and one of the men said that he had really been cheated by an early partner in business, and he made the comment. He said, "Boy, if I am ever, you know, diagnosed terminal, I may look that guy up." And I thought, well, isn't that an interesting, you know, concept? And then the other thing is, at the same time in the New York Times, there was an article about a visual arts professor, and she had sort of spun off a whole new area of business, which was teaching law enforcement and medical experts how to see, how to look at pictures, in the case of law enforcement, how to look at, you know, evidence photos.
Yeah.
Medical people, how to look at pictures of their patients or different issues around medicine, and then how to write, stop looking for what you want to see and start to look at what is actually there. And so those were some ideas I had as I started writing the book.
And that was very interesting, that whole business about, as you're talking with this person in the book, who's schooling people about it.
Right. And in fact, I had a personal experience years ago when I was working in public relations in the field of health, and went to a meeting in Kentucky, and it was a big meeting between emergency management and public health people. And I went with a colleague, and she was really in charge of the meeting, and she had a whole list of questions, and, you know, we went through the whole afternoon. And then later, when we were back in our own offices and reporting back to people, she said, well, this is, you know, this is what happened, and this was their responses. And another person in the group turned to me and said, well, do you have anything to add? And I said, yes. Emergency management and public health are not talking to each other. And this was critical, because this was all part of learning to plan for catastrophic emergencies. And my colleague who'd been there said, I didn't hear that. And I said, no, you didn't, because all you listened for were the answers to your questions. And so I use that in the book, too.
That's a very, very interesting point, and certainly does come up in the book. What, do you read a lot, by the way, of mystery books yourself?
Well, you know, this is a terrible thing to confess. I don't read mysteries when I'm writing one, because I'm afraid something's going to seep into my work. And then when I'm not writing, I do read mysteries, but I'm just very selective of really mysteries written by people who are no longer alive. I love the Martin Beck detective series by a couple named Joal and Walu. They predate Stieg Larsson, and their books are excellent. And also along that line is Henning Mankell. His first five or six books on the Wallander series I love. My favorite is a guy, Ross Thomas, who wrote mysteries, many of them set around Washington, D.C., because he was in public relations in the oil industry. Any one of those three, their books, I love them. They're, you know, extremely well written. The dialogue is crisp and fun, and the mysteries are good and juicy.
Well, you caught me off guard in this book. I was trying to figure out who did it.
Really good.
And it was a nice little surprise, actually. Obviously, I'm not going to say.
Thank you.
who did it? But that's always kind of that's the fun. Why do you think we love mystery so much? Is it just that fun of trying to figure out who did it? And
I think that's part of it. But I think the other part of it is that there's an ending to it. There's a resolution to the problem. And I think for many of us, if you're dealing with everyday life and family issues and health issues and, you know, things that aren't easily resolved, to pick up a good mystery and have a beginning, a middle, and an end makes a difference. And it's also why I personally have a hard time reading literary fiction, because sometimes people are kind of, in my humble opinion, kind of wallowing in their personal issues. I'm kind of like, well, let's get on with this. Let's have a beginning, a middle, and an end to this, please. So yeah. I think that has a lot to do with the appeal of a mystery.
I kind of, and the dialogue. You know, there are some writers, I really like their dialogue. Now, John Sanford's one, I like the dialogue, although it can be a little raw at times. But he's really, he's someone that I guess I just enjoy reading his books for the dialogue.
Well, you know, he comes out of the newspaper industry, and he's got a great ear for dialogue. I mean, he was a reporter, I think, for 20 years before he started writing mysteries. And I find that people who were reporters, tend to really be good with dialogue.
We've got Mike in Denmark up with a question again. Mike, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Hey,
I've got to ask the question. I didn't read the book, but when we were talking about that 8-inch jig earlier.
8-ounce, yeah.
What were they fishing for? What type of fish?
Well, they would have been fishing for walleye.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because not reading the book, I pulled up off the internet. They do jig for muskie, and the gentleman was using a 7-ounce jig for muskie, and it just was unsettling to me. I had to know what kind of fish. And if you did, in fact, make a mistake in the book, and I thought, well, if you're fishing for muskie, you did not make a mistake.
So, right, but that is one big fish to try to bring up through the ice.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, yeah. But you get the point. So I found out.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, you don't get a lot of ice fishing for muskie because the season ends usually the last week, the end of November.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
And so, we've done a lot of ice fishing for walleye about that time in the north. So I guess you could be ice fishing for muskie, and then the 8-ouncer would be appropriate, I guess.
Well, and I certainly have some individuals in my books that don't care whether it's in season or not.
Yeah.
If they can get away with it, you know.
Oh,
golly.
Well, Doc's granddaughter, you know, you've got those three characters, but now Doc's granddaughter, Beth, is featured in this book as well. And, you know, how do you get inside the head of a teenager?
You know, that's a good question. I do have three grandchildren in that age group. And to tell you the truth, Larry, if you think back yourself, you have to remember what you were thinking at the age of 13, 14, 15. And, I guess it's just observation and I wasn't the best-behaved teenager myself. So, I don't know. If you think I got inside her head pretty well, then I feel good about that.
Well, I think you did. I have my daughter's 13, so
oh.
I know kind of what goes on in the mind of a 13-year-old girl, so I was kind of comparing Beth to my own daughter, Emily, and I'm thinking, well, you know, there's some similarities here.
Well, and the other thing is what kids are exposed to today and some of what's happening around them that you, as a parent or grandparent, you just hope they don't go in that direction. Life today for these kids, I mean, they're much more aware of things than I think some of us were growing up back in the 1950s. Now you know how old I am.
Well, you know, Here's another question that came. Somebody brought this up with me. We were talking about, she was talking about cozy mysteries.
Yes.
Some people might consider your books cozy mysteries. How do you feel about that term?
Well, initially, I was accepted. My first manuscripts were accepted by a publisher who specializes in cozy mysteries. And I hadn't heard the term. And the editor explained to me they have no graphic violence on the page, no graphic sex, and no use of the F word. And at the time, she was telling me that the first book I wrote, they would not publish because it was too dark. And I had said at the time, well, you know, I don't have any of those things on the page, so, you know, what's your problem? And the problem was that I had dealt with an issue of water quality that was causing hermaphroditic life forms, and I had sort of, like, migrated that into human beings. And so the marketing team had said, no hermaphrodites being featured in a mystery. And it scaled things back, and so the book became very reasonable, and they did publish it. And that was because I had co-authored a book, nonfiction, with a doctor who is a specialist in hormone treatments for women. So anyway, moving on from that, though, I have really felt my books are much more what we call police procedurals. So they aren't cozy, but they aren't, they still don't have graphic sex or violence. And a big reason for that is that I personally can't read graphic sex and violence. And yet my books are darker than the average cozy, which tend to be books about, you know, fruits and vegetables and things like that.
Yeah. That's a great explanation. I think you've that figured out in your own mind, and now you've put it into my head as well. So I think that's a really good description. So Beth's in there, and you've had other granddaughters featured in there, and the relationship between Doc and Llewellyn, let's see, how would we say this? Progressing slowly, I guess we could say.
I don't know. So I had some reader email me that it was time for them to get married, and I thought, well, my response was, you know, I'll talk to them about it, but I'm not sure Llewellyn's really up for that. One of the things I think that I sense in my characters is that it's good for each of them to have their own space, that they can each retreat and to a quiet place where there aren't any other people and there isn't a relationship at the moment. And I'm not sure that that isn't healthy for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Well, this whole location, I think the location, you talked about that earlier, but I think it's a really important, that Loon Lake is really important to the whole, all of your stories.
Well, I think it's a character in the stories. And back when my first editor was accepting my manuscript, she said, we've been looking for 2 years for a mystery series set against a background of fishing. And we've gone to all the major outdoors writers at all the magazines like, you know, Sports Afield and Outdoor Life. And she said they all submitted the same story. They all had a male fishing guide in Montana. And it's just so nice, Wisconsin, and, you know, this mix of characters. And I was pleased to hear that. I mean, who cares about Montana, for God's sake?
Well, have you got any, are you going to do any readings? Are you going to go around a little bit or not?
Oh, I have a lot set up. I'm going to start, first of all, I'm sure I'll be at Yankee Bookstore sometime the first week of June or so, because we're just waiting for books to come in. I'll be at Mystery to Me in Madison on Saturday, June 2nd. I'll be in Montello the next day. I'll be at Once Upon a Crime in Minneapolis in the middle of the month on the 15th. And I'm doing a whole series of signings for Book World stores all around the state and into Michigan and stuff. And so, again, there's a whole schedule on my website, and I'll be giving some library talks and all that kind of stuff. But I could spend 15 minutes giving all those dates.
Well, now, give us your website again, your Facebook page.
It would be, the website is, you know, www.victoriahouston.com. Victoria Houston, one word. And then on Facebook, just go to Victoria Houston's Mysteries.
Well, so now are you working on another one already?
I am. I'm starting number 18. Yep.
Wow.
Dead Big Dog.
Dead Big Dog.
But I don't know who did it yet.
Oh, so that just happens as you're going along, eh?
It does. Sometimes I've gotten to the middle of a book and I sit down and read through the pages that I've got and think, oh, my God, how did this happen? What are we going to do next?
And you do. You write pretty much every day, don't you? Or most
I do. Once I get started, I do. In fact, I'm currently starting as we speak. And I really do, I would say, 6 days a week, and it's first thing in the morning. And I put in on the computer a good solid 2 hours. And that's as much of that kind of concentration as I can do. And then later in the day, I'll do some research or I'll be doing signings or something like that.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Victoria, to have a chance to speak with you. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us today. And, let's hope Dead Spider does really well.
Well, thank you, Larry, and it's great to talk to you, too. So thank you for chatting.
Yeah, Victoria Houston, our guest today, the author of the Loon Lake Mystery Series. It's a fishing mystery series, and her most recent is titled Dead Spider. Coming up, we're going to turn our attention to other things. We're going to be talking about collectibles and zeroing in on sports, on entertainment, and pop culture memorabilia. That next here on the Ideas Network.